Let's talk about the solution then. If we're out of balance now, which most of Americans are and most of the world is, how do we get ourselves back in balance? What's the cycle of balance? It's the first step.
The first step is to superhydrate. It's to cleanse. And it's just not the bowels. It's a holistic approach to cleanse not only the bowels, but the blood and the tissues, the lymphatic fluids, all the fluids of the body. And you have to literally flood the body.
So what's happening is I got all this toxicity. I got an environment that's dirty, and you want me to wash it out. And I know I'm using a pretty poor metaphor here, but you want us to cleanse it out. And you're doing that primarily for superhydration. And what do you use for that superhydration?
Well, structured water. We talked about fluids and fluids right, which aren't necessarily good for us. But structured water, we take a water that has a pH of about 7 okay, or better, and then we add to that. So we add our elements to that to raise the energy, or we can add super greens, which will actually raise the energy or electrical potential even higher.
So, for example, I know you have a product called pH, or proper pH, is that what it's
called?
Prime pH. And I use it all the time. You just drop these little droplets in your water, and then immediately when you drink water, you're getting this alkalinity in your body to help balance things out, which will give your body now, the cells, the chance to keep their electrical charge proper.
Exactly.
And also cause those cells then to circulate more effectively. But the green drink is what's amazing to me, and I really want to recommend it to people, because you can drink that, and you have it. You're exhausted. I used to, for example, go all day long and not eat. It still happens every once in a while, but I'm a little better at it. And so by the end of the night, man, I was ready to consume anything. You know, it's like, I got to have it. Give me something now, because my blood sugar had dropped so far.
Right.
And so now what I do is I just drink the green drink throughout the day. And man, it's like there's a burst, 250 megahertz or whatever it is. I get that immediately. And I don't have my blood sugar going all over the place. And I'm staying alkaline. So my body
exactly,
isn't breaking down. And it's so easy, because it's not always easy to go grab some of the food. But I can drink that drink in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. And I can take it on the plane and dump some of it in there. I mean, it's been invaluable to me. So tell us, how long do you cleanse for? We're polluted. How long do we cleanse for? Is that first stage to get balance back?
Well, hydration is probably the most important thing, and it's something that we should do for a lifetime.
Right.
How much depends on the state of balance that you're in, or imbalance. If you're in a state of imbalance, you probably need to hydrate up to 4 to 5 liters a day. That's
wow,
over a gallon
wow,
of super greens, and you only use approximately a half a tablespoon to a tablespoon per liter. Or another way to look at that is maybe 1 to 2 teaspoons per 8 ounce. And so approximately 4 to 5 liters. If you're in a state of balance, maybe 2 to 3 liters a day would be proper.
So, for example, this bottle is a familiar type of size. This is 1.5 liters. So
right,
ideally, you drink 2 of these, maybe if you were cleansing, maybe 2.5 of these in a day. I drink 1 of these in the morning, 1 of these in the afternoon, and the difference in your energy is unbelievable. So this is what you're suggesting in essence.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah. For the first 7 to 10 days, Tony, you would go on a liquid green diet.
Okay.
That doesn't mean that you stop eating. Everything is liquefied. It's kind of like going on baby food for about 7 to 10 days.
Right.
Now, if you're really, really sick, you probably wouldn't want to go that long. Maybe 3 to 4 days. But the key is to give you a shower from within.
Mm.
Now, we take showers every day, but we just want to shower within our bodies. And we do
right,
that by superhydrating. It's kind of like a spring runoff, where
right,
everything becomes anew again.
Right.
Okay? And so we do that through hydration.
I tell you, the difference that people experience, it's the first thing I have to do. I say, listen, if you don't do anything else, get this Prime pH and get this green drink, and all I'm going to ask you to do is for the next 5 days, drink 2 or 3 of these things a day. And I said, ideally, change your diet, but if that's all you do, because what happens is their energy just bursts because all those poisons start to get flushed out of the system, but also they've got the alkalinity to deal with it. Their body isn't trying to strip all these other reserves from the system to make it
right,
happen. It's very, very dramatic. I know you've seen that for
yeah,
years.
I have. For people that are healthy, their energy is going to increase.
Right.
For people that are sick, their energy is going to increase. Amazing things happen when you alkalize and energize the body through superhydration.
So, okay, so that's our first step, is to cleanse. Ideally, 7 to 10 days, minimum 3 to 4 days. Superhydration, because some people think a cleanse is they take some drink that is going to cleanse their colon alone, but a lot of times they're taking stuff in that actually makes their body more acid while they're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that we've done that. What's the second step to really putting my body back in balance?
Okay, the second step is to take control. And what that means is to break the pattern of negative thinking or negative diets, that are polluting up your inner terrain.
Right, because we don't want to just cleanse it and then go back to doing the same thing, because that's not going to support us, obviously.
Right, so if your diet is high in acid foods like heavy proteins or high sugar fruits or starches, you need to move towards green foods and green drinks, more alkalizing foods, good oils like avocados. You also need to look at also the emotional side. So the negative thoughts, words, and deeds can also create excess acidity within the human body as well. So those patterns also need to be broken.
That's really important. And I think for most people, I say, oh my God, like, how am I going to get my kids to eat green foods? You know, they're not going to drink broccoli and have cucumbers and have big salads. But what we're really talking about here is just making sure that about 70 to 80% of your diet is alive with more water content. And the way to do that is to have a big salad with every meal. The way to do that is to start to have some of those other green things. But one of the biggest pieces I found is just getting them to drink the green drink, because they'll do that, because it doesn't taste bad by any stretch.
No.
I don't think it tastes great. It's kind of neutralish. You know,
tastes like grass.
Yeah, it's like grass, exactly. It's like, yeah, what is this? Although grass doesn't sound too pleasant to me. But the point is, the kids will drink that, and then they'll get that green, and they'll get that cleansing that's going on there.
Right.
So first thing is cleanse. Second thing is break the pattern, take control. What's the third step to really making sure we maximize our energy level?
Okay, the third is provide. Provide those vital elements that'll build healthy cells, that'll organize healthy cells. And I perceive this in the acronym WOMAN. I perceive that every man, and even maybe even woman, needs a good woman. Like a woman needs a good mother or a good sister. And a man always needs a good woman, right?
That's true. So the W stands for?
Water.
Right.
And O stands for oxygen. M stands for minerals and these little tiny anatomical elements that help to build and structure genetic material. A stands for alkalizing, and N stands for the correct nutrition and diet.
So if we get a good woman, if you got good water, good oxygen, the right nutrients, the right minerals, etc., we're going to begin to have the elements there available for our body to rebuild itself, because we got rid of the poison, we broke the pattern, and now we're giving it what it needs. And then our body gets back into balance. And when it's in balance, what happens?
Your eyes brighten, your skin brightens, you have incredible energy and vitality. The weight starts melding off your body. You don't have that beer gut or those love handles or those thighs. These are all acid buildups, and this just starts melding away. And it's not in pain that this happens. That's what's incredible. People that experience this at a high energetic level as they're hydrating. And it's an amazing thing that happens.
Well, as you say, it all comes down to alkalize and energize. Now, one of the things that's interesting is in giving the body what it needs is you've created these products, and I certainly want to promote them for your being here with us as well, because they've changed my life. And that is, you've found a way to deliver these nutrients so the body can really use it. And the challenge, I think, for most people is that they take a traditional vitamin, and you know, you've shown me in the megahertz scale, they're in the 3 to 10 range usually.
Right.
So there's almost no energy available. The body doesn't know how to absorb it because it's got to go through the digestive tract.
Mm-hmm.
So your solution to that is to really deliver almost all of your products as a base in a colloidal form.
Right.
Could you explain to people what a colloidal is? Because many of us heard of colloidal minerals at least. But why do colloidals work, and why are they so effective in our ability to actually get the nutrients that we need?
Well, when we're talking about colloidal, we're talking about size, and we're also talking about system. So we're talking about the size of the matter or the particle. And our particles, because we're using very fine meshes, range at 5 nanometers. Now, 5 nanometers would be like you standing on the top of the Empire State Building, looking down and trying to see that little tiny ant. That's how small. So it's transdermal. That means that this little particle will go right into the lymph or right into the blood. And since it's negatively charged, these elements can then go to work to help neutralize acids or help build or structure or act as cofactors for carrying out metabolic biological purposes.
Now, you deliver these, they're in a water solution, these tiny particles that obviously can't even see, and then what you do is you drop those under the tongue in a sublingual delivery system.
Correct.
And the reason you do that is because then it doesn't have to go through the digestive tract, it's absorbed. How much is absorbed?
Well, we perceive 100%.
Right.
I'm sure there's some loss factor, but because of the size of the particle, it immediately goes, it's transdermal, so it crosses membrane and goes right into the fluids of the body.
Right, so the body has the nutrients it needs immediately, as opposed to going through the digestive tract, going through the acids of the digestive tract, and being eliminated very often through the kidneys or through other exit forms.
Exactly, so when you drink the super greens or you take others of our other colloids, I mean, you feel the immediate impact.
Right.
It's immediate.
Right.
So you feel a surge of energy that comes on because you're alkalizing. You have now nutrients, buffers, that are going to help provide energy or neutralize the acids, bring more balance to the system.
Right, it makes so much sense. Now, when you do that, even when you put the super greens in there, the reason it goes in water is water, I guess, is the best delivery system for the system, for the body. Why is
that? It's the catalyst, because we're just like the Earth. We're 70% water and 30% matter. So we're a body of water in this gelatinous material. And we perceive matter, but we don't perceive this fluid.
Right.
And so we concentrate on the solutes or the solids rather than the solvents or the water. That's why it's so important to superhydrate, because we are a body of water.
Well, one of the things you told me when I first met you is I realized I needed to alkalize, and I understood the value of wheatgrass as an alkalizer and also as a blood builder, so to speak, because I guess the structure of chlorophyll is so close to the structure of hemoglobin, you know, within the bloodstream.
It's identical.
It's identical. Well, I guess for one, well, there's one difference?
One difference, the center atom, magnesium for chlorophyll and iron for hemoglobin.
If you want to build your blood, which is the river of life, then you probably want to give it some nutrients that the body can quickly utilize. And they're so similar. It's one of the reasons it's been promoted throughout the years, not just by yourself, obviously, but many other scientists and people in the dietary field. But one of the things you told me one day is I was saying, oh, I'm going to get some of that. You know, I love the green drink, but I better go have some wheatgrass. And you were saying, no, Tony, honestly, you know, and I was trying to figure out how to have wheatgrass over in Fiji, as I think where our conversation started,
right.
You know, because I didn't have a wheatgrass machine there. And you said, no, this green drink we have here, the super greens, is better. But I said, well, wait a second, you know, it's dried now, and I got to put it in water. And you gave me the metaphor of pouring water on the seed and seeing it sprout.
Right.
Aren't you disturbing that, you know, wheatgrass when you dry it out and put it in a powder form? And how could that be better than just traditional wheatgrass?
Well, we use a low heat dehydration process of 70 degrees Fahrenheit or less to extract the water and to stabilize that living indestructible matter. The key that's destroyed is the charge. We put that charge back on. So the matter is still there. It's just in a dormant state until we add the water to it, and then it becomes alive again.
And the reason you dehydrate it, I guess, is so it doesn't break down. Because
exactly. It'll ferment and decompose, and we don't want that because that creates more acidity. So
right.
We want to have it in a stable state, in a dry state, so that when we add the catalyst, which is water, that activates it, it becomes alive, and that energy is still there. In fact, we've measured it. You've seen the pictures.
Sure.
I mean, that vibrant energy that's coming off that matter. So we've placed that charge back on it, and because matter cannot be created nor can it be destroyed, it has always existed. All we're doing is then putting it into an environment to where it can then become alive, just like that seed. It's in a dormant, sleeping state.
Right, until you put the water to it, and then boom,
exactly.
It starts to sprout, and life as we know it happens.
Exactly.
It's fascinating. Well, what's great about it is, the convenience of it, because when you go someplace and you don't have access to a wheatgrass machine, which is not easy, you have it. Plus, you have more than just one wheatgrass in there. You have many different things, and they're all extremely alkalizing. Is that the primary focus of it, besides the energy?
The primary focus is to alkalize and energize, and it's also the concentration. So it takes me 20 ounces of material. Okay, to make 1 ounce of material. So
wow.
Once I've extracted the water out, 20 ounces to make 1 ounce, which is the correct proportion to bring a body from a state of acidity to a state of alkalinity to keep things in balance.
Right, because I don't know how else you'd do it, because if you think about it, most people are living such an acid diet, and if it takes 20 parts of alkalinity to neutralize only one part of acid, most of us probably wouldn't be able to consume, you know, enough green foods to be able to balance it out, because most people's lifestyles in America, at least, and most of the industrialized world, is extremely acid, obviously.
And if your bank account's in a deficit, meaning that you're full of acid, you're experiencing different levels or different symptomologies based upon the acidity that you're holding in your body.
Right.
And so you have to neutralize that through superhydration and providing those alkalizing elements and substances that will help to bring the body back up to where it was before.
Now, all of your products, you've developed a variety of specific products, because it's kind of like everybody needs to alkalize and energize. But then we all have different genetic strengths or weaknesses. So if people have acid, some persons are affected by acid where it affects, let's say, their liver, or somebody else maybe affects their heart.
Right.
Everybody has a different genetic tendency or weakness, I guess. And I know you've developed specific products that are designed to help strengthen those areas. Maybe you can explain how those products work.
Okay, acids settle at the weakest point of the body because of their level of intelligence and also their charge. So they'll settle either in the heart, and that could be a genetic predisposition, or the pancreas could be predisposition as well. And so those acids will settle. So we have products like the pancreas product, which helps to support and neutralize those acids which are specific to that particular organ, or the heart, or the lungs. So it's product specific. since we're super hydrating and alkalizing the whole body, we also want to support specific organs and help rebuild and organize their cells as well.
Now, one of the scientists that I sent to see you, a different one than Dr. Solomon, was very skeptical of her, saying, like, how can you say, for example, you have a prostate product? I know for men that's been very dramatic. Well,
right.
One of the first things that brought me to you is a gentleman here in La Jolla that we know who's a lawyer who had severe challenges. He was getting up in the middle of the night, urinating, and I guess that's one of the symptoms of prostate challenge. And then, in addition to that, he was having sexual dysfunction. And this is prior to people having the new drug of Viagra to go after,
right,
and being able to see blue on a regular basis. But the point of the matter is, he had a complete recovery, both from the sexual dysfunction, as I know you know, because he's your
right
patient, but also he's not had a single night since that time where he got up and had to urinate. I mean, it's been a complete reversal. I know you've seen this again and
yes,
again.
Yeah.
But when I said this one gentleman to you who came back converted, so to speak, at first he's saying, like, how can this product really go directly to the prostate? Can
mm-hmm.
you explain that in a way that's not too technical?
Here again, it comes back to bioelectrics, okay? The products carry an electrical charge. When there is a part of the body that's acidic, those alkalizing, negatively charged elements and herbs or vitamins will go to that specific area and nourish the body and bring balance, alkalinity, and wholeness.
And I guess you guys have followed this with radioactive tracer studies to actually show that those nutrients go to that specific part of the body.
Exactly.
Right. In fact, you know, people talk about this and they think that there's nothing they can do, or the only thing to do is some kind of radical treatment. I know that there's been some dramatic cases that you've worked with that are documented. When I was there at your blood class with some of those doctors,
mm-hmm.
you brought in some of your past patients and we got to see an update of them and their blood. And what was the guy's name? John?
Well, John Bailey.
Right.
He had a pH of around
pH
8.
PSA?
PSA, excuse
right.
me. PSA of about 8 that dropped over 4 points.
Wow. Over what period of time?
Approximately 6 to 8 weeks.
Wow, that's fantastic. Well, let's talk now about some of the more popular diets right now, because what I see happen in our society is we go from one extreme to another. You know, now fat is the bad guy. Everybody's trying to avoid fat, although this new Mediterranean diet study is starting to stir people up.
Mm-hmm.
But so they buy everything that says no fat, but of course it's filled with sugar, you know,
right.
and or it's just full of carbohydrates, which become sugar. And
mm-hmm.
as you and I both know, anything you eat in excess is turned to fat ultimately. So, but people don't know that, and they get caught up in it. And we used to then be in a position where it was like high-protein diets was the big promotion, Atkins, and now he's come full circle. Everybody's now going, you know, he's the hot thing, Atkins again. Then it was all, let's go for high carbohydrates. You know, and then the zone comes along and says, no, let's do all of them together, 30, 30, 40, you know. It's just insane. So I like to take some time and walk through them, because I know people have promoted them, and I know they've lost weight on them. But as we well know, there's a big difference between health and fitness. You know, FloJo was a very fit woman, but she's dead, you know.
Right.
And so we might want to talk a little about that, too, maybe later on. But let's start with maybe the Atkins diet, because it's coming back full circle. It's a diet that tells people go out and eat all this massive amount of protein and even fats, you know, saturated fats even. Like, go have bacon and eggs. I mean, it's unbelievable what they're promoting. And yet people lose weight. I mean, maybe tell us, why do we not want to do that, and why are people losing weight on this diet?
Well, the first thing that hydrates in the human body is the glucose. It's the sugar. And when you make a change from a high-sugar diet and go to the proteins, just that change is going to cause some weight loss. Proteins burn a lot slower, and of course they are also lower in sugar.
Sure.
But in doing that, I perceive that there's a window where you're going to get an impact or a change, and there will be some weight loss, but you're going to go into ketosis or acidosis. You're going to be building up acids such as uric acid, which eventually that particular mode will put you into a worse situation than from whence you began.
Right. When you're on the diet, they actually have you, I'll be direct, urinate on a stick to make sure you're not breaking down too fast, because they acknowledge that ketosis occurs. What that literally is cells are being destroyed more rapidly, I guess, than anything else, and you're taking in all this uric acid from the animals. Is that right?
Right. And the acid permeates the cell membrane and disturbs that cell, and it goes through its morbid evolutions and becomes bacteria. And so you're just building up over a period of time more and more bacteria, which can evolve into yeasts and funguses, which creates more acid, and you get into a more dangerous situation than you were before.
And interestingly enough, also, I've read even in other medical doctors' descriptions of it as how destructive it is. They say it's because the reason you lose weight is you lose water weight. Because there's so much acid in your body goes into hyperdrive to, and they urinate a lot in this diet, to try and get rid of this ketosis, get rid of this acid in your body. Is that true?
That's true. Water is one of the buffers. And so water is going to be used to move these acids out of the system or dilute it.
Right. That makes total sense. Well, and Anna, what you see is, I know you've looked at a lot of people's blood who've been through a variety of these diets, and the Atkins diet specifically, and the breakdown you find there, I know it's pretty extreme.
It's very extreme. From a healthy state of a cell, which is nice and round and vibrant and energetic, to this type of diet, the cells are dark, they're morbid, they're breaking apart, they're exploding. Yeah. There's a tremendous amount of yeast and bacteria in the blood, and this just builds up over a period of time. So initially, just for the fact that there's a change, you might feel better, but over a longer period of time, that buildup of acid draws down on your water content, it draws down on your elemental buffers, your protein buffers, your fat buffers, and eventually you end up in a worse situation than you were before.
Now, what was popular before that, and it's kind of going up and down because he's writing several more books, is this book on The Zone, Barry Sears. I was just picking this up the other day again, looking at it. I remember reading this book, and part of this book hooked me, because the mindset at that time for me was, I was go, 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 not eat all day long because I'm so excited, passionate, involved in meetings, doing what I'm doing, or I'm on stage, and I don't feel like eating. But then at the end of the day, boy, my blood sugar dropped, and I was like ready, as I said, to eat anything at that stage practically. But I would consume a massive amount of food because my blood sugar was down, usually carbohydrates, mm-hmm. Heavy duty on carbohydrates. And so he talked about in here about your blood sugar and the effect on blood sugar, and then what you should really do is have this balance of carbohydrates and proteins mm-hmm. and fats, this 30-30-40 syndrome, and how you should start your morning by eating protein. Now that's where I was blown out. You can eat the most heavy, concentrated, and the kinds of proteins he suggests are animal proteins.
Right.
And it just made no sense to me that I've rested all night, I fasted and cleansed, and if you're on a fast, the first thing you do is go eat some animal product, en masse. But he said, but then you'll burn more slowly throughout the day and you'll have more energy. What I did agree with was he said, you should have more smaller meals throughout the day. It made sense to me that my blood sugar wouldn't be up and down anymore like that. So I started, even having people in seminars have more snacks throughout the day. But again, I felt I wasn't willing to do some of the diet. It was just ridiculous. I felt better at first, but it didn't last. And the reason it didn't last is I was still being acid, Mm-hmm. But any changes you say makes you feel better initially. But like, here's a breakfast. It says 8 ounces of Jimmy Dean turkey sausage.
Wow.
8 ounces of shredded potatoes. Mm-hmm. 1.5 cups of egg substitute. 1/4 cup of picante sauce, 6 corn tortillas, and 6 ounces of Mexican cheese. Now, I don't think you have to be a genius to figure out this is not exactly a cleansing meal, this is a clogging meal. But tell us about The Zone. Why, and by the way, it says lose weight permanently and reset your genetic code. I don't know anything here that resets your genetic code. In fact, I don't know anybody who's capable of doing that. That's on the cover of this book. Is that science? Is that, give me some feedback.
Well, I mean, you've given me a lot here to think about.
Okay.
I mean, I think about that meal and I go, wow. I mean, protein for breakfast, particularly sausage. The USDA has done their own research, and the loads, the pathological loads in sausage is between 300 to 500 million pathological morbid forms of bacteria, yeast, and fungus. In comparison, let's say if you got up and had some vegetable soup or a salad, we're looking at maybe 50 to 100 pathological loads. And
as
so the difference,
500 million, 300 to 500 million.
So what happens when you eat that kind of a meal, it activates the immune system. The blood looks like chaos. I mean, it's like bacteria and undigested matter is bouncing all over the place, and the immune system is just trying to engulf it to move it out before it disturbs more cells. And so this type of a diet, and then the potatoes on top of that, which is a starch which breaks down to sugar, ferments and creates even more acid. And so that's a very, very acid meal. In fact, there was nothing in that particular breakfast meal which would be alkalizing and energizing.
Yeah, it's a dead meal. But people say, but I feel better. Now, why do they feel better initially?
The change, here again.
Right.
What's happening there at the anatomical level is you're giving a new impression. And so that matter or these little tiny beans are going to respond to that make up living cells.
Right.
One of my theories is it's not the cell that's living per se, but that which makes up the cell.
Right.
These little tiny particles of dust or tiny beans that make up that cell respond to this new information.
And Dr. Bechamp, that theory actually came from Dr. Bechamp and also Dr. Enderlin from Germany, so many people before you, but you also discovered it on your own and gave it your own terms, but you do recognize, you know, obviously their work prior to you in this
area. Yeah, Anton Bechamp in 1864 discovered a tiny indestructible being, which he called the microzyma, which means small bean,
right,
or tiny ferment, which was the only thing that was living per se.
Right.
What I have seen in the blood is that there's organization and disorganization, and the environment is key. And so when you put this type of a diet, like the Zone diet or the Atkins diet, when you're eating those high proteins and starchy foods, now there is something good about the Zone, and they add the good oils in there, and so that's
right,
also very good. But the rest of it is very disturbing to the cells and creates an environment for cells to disorganize rather than organize. So rather than generation, there's degeneration.
Breakdown. Now, the last one I'll mention that's at least currently become really hot is the four blood types.
Mm-hmm.
And now, as a type O, what I'm supposed to do is go out and be carnivorous, basically.
Okay.
And eat animals and cheese and meat and red meat, it's telling me to eat, and everything else. And I my diet was like that 20 years ago, and I was about as sickly as I can remember. I had no energy, I was fat. But it's saying this is what your body is made for. Your blood is different than everybody else. And it's, you know, it's so interesting how people are able to, we're all able to be convinced because we want some logic behind diet, and there's so much confusion. So, oh, okay, my blood, that makes sense. You know, I believe the river of life is your blood.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I started looking at the recommendations, my brain went, you got to be kidding me. What's the fallacy in this idea of blood types determining your diet?
Well, if you could imagine this book, if animals could read, like the gorilla, the elephant, and the bear, and we're trying to convince them of you've got to eat for your blood type, they're going to go, come on, this is ridiculous. I mean,
right,
they do that which is natural.
Right.
And so they're grazing animals. We're grazing animals. And so our rule is we eat nothing with a face. If it's got a face, we don't eat it.
That's great.
But what we're looking for is the energy. We're looking for the energy value of that food.
Mm-hmm.
When you cook and process, or you're eating matter that's coming from an animal, I mean, that's dead matter.
Right.
You have to ask the question, where did that animal get its protein? And it got, I perceive it got its protein with its head to the ground.
Right.
And so I also perceive that every animal on the planet needs to somehow, either directly or indirectly, eat greens.
Sure.
If they don't, they can't build blood. And blood is the key to a healthy body.
Well, you see that even in the carnivorous animals. You watch the lion take down the zebra, and they rip open the intestines is the first thing they do. I mean, science has shown that. And they eat the intestines. And what's in the intestines of this herbivore is the grasses and the greens and the food,
right,
you know, the vegetables that it's getting first. Although, obviously, their bodies are very different than our own in terms of the way they function, and they do need much more protein and animal matter. They're designed for it. Their teeth are different. They've got a very tiny little digestive tract to get in it, all those acids in and out fast versus we got, 25, 28 feet, you know, to slowly absorb it. So,
but these animals spend most of their time sleeping. And so when you're eating these heavy proteins,
you don't see lions running around frisky all over the place.
You don't. The frisky ones are the grass eating.
That's true.
And so they're tremendously fatigued. They have to lay around because that protein just sits in their gut and ferments and creates all kinds of morbid acids, and they have to rest. It creates a lot of heat in the body.
Right.
And I perceive that protein like that should only be eaten in times of famine.
Right.
Or in times of cold. And we're not experiencing any of those types of problems in our society today.
Well, also, you look at the vultures, that they get the very last part of what's left, the dried up, dead part of the meat. There's no vegetable left, there's no, and they look like it. But and now I know you don't tell people they have to become vegetarian. I guess when we talk a little bit more about, with Shelley, about the solutions here, I just want people to know you can certainly have fish. But what you're really suggesting is that they've got to at least make 70 or 80% of their diet more alkalizing, more live, more salads, more vegetables. And there are things like, if you would have told me, you know, a year ago, that I would want to eat bell pepper as a snack torn up, or, I mean, people hearing this probably say, oh my God, I'll never do that. I would have said I'd never do that, even though I felt I was very health-oriented, or I had English cucumbers and got really addicted to them, because when your body becomes alkaline, you crave alkaline foods. You don't crave acid foods. It's not a willpower thing. You know, or I'm going to have celery sticks. I'm going to just like, listen, I got to have a life, you know.
Yeah.
But when you start drinking the green drink, there's such a radical shift. Like, I even went to a salad bar, and I usually put tons of all the salad dressing on everything else, because after all, it's 70% salad, you know.
Right.
Or 90% salad, probably 70%. I probably had 30% salad dressing on the thing. But I could taste the sugar, and and once your body's changed, it's like you don't want it. It's really dramatic. And I really want people to know that, hear this, because they might be panicking, going, God, it sounds so important, but can I really make that lifestyle change? All you really got to do, I think, is start to drink the green drink, start to have more vegetables. Like, I love broccoli. It's one of the vegetables I do love, and I love stir-fried broccoli. I have that in the morning, and then, you know, and I drink my green drink, and I'm ready to rock and roll, whereas before, I thought, I got to have tons of fruit to make it happen.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about the lifestyle changes. But when it comes to these diets, the reason people experience changes and the reason it doesn't last is there's an initial shift which breaks the pattern. When you break the pattern, the body's got to adjust, and there's a shift in the way we feel. But then ultimately, you've seen the blood of these people, and you know that there's a breakdown that happens. One of the impacts of these diets, I know you've shared with me, is that they create a tremendous amount of toxicity in the body because they create so much acid. You know, some diets are very sugar-based or carbohydrate-based to an extreme, so the body can't deal with it, and that sugar turns to acid. And some are extremely oriented towards animal proteins, and so you have this devoid mass that also is bringing its own uric acids and is breaking down into acid in the system. So either one of those is creating an environment, as you describe, that becomes disturbed, where cells start breaking down, and as they do, the environment becomes polluted, and then cells start mutating. But one of the biggest things that you see now is we see all these commercials telling us more than we want to know about women's yeast problems.
Right.
And we also hear about candida. I know it's not just a problem for women, it's also for men, although men don't recognize it as that. What is yeast? You know, why are we seeing it proliferating so powerfully in our culture right now, and what does it do to us?
Well, yeast is a single-celled organism that proliferates in an acidic terrain.
Okay.
And it's rampant. In fact, in 1988, Dr. Truss wrote a book, and Orrin Truss is his name, about yeast and its connection to a variety of ailments and symptomologies, particularly PMS and chronic fatigue. But not only do women suffer from this, but also men as well. And yeast, when you eat these types of diet and these yeasts proliferate, they have a ferocious appetite for sugar. And so the very things that we crave are the very things we need to avoid, because they proliferate an environment that's very, very acidic.
Right. So they actually, from what I understand, they need the yeast, they need, rather than say, the sugar to survive, these little creatures inside of you, and so they start consuming it. And so what happens is your blood sugar drops because you're not getting the benefit of it, and then you're even more hungry again, and then they eat it again, and it becomes a vicious cycle of you constantly eating but never really feeling full, never really feeling satisfied.
Right. And so what happens then is that environment's changed by going on a protein-type diet.
Okay.
And so now these yeast cells, like candida, have to shift their emphasis from having a ferocious appetite for sugar. Now they're moving into protein fermentation and move towards fermenting proteins, which produce another type of acid, like uric acid.
Right.
But they both filthy up the system. So when they ferment sugars, they produce acetaldehyde and alcohols, which make us drunk, give us what is called the drunkenness disease, which leads to chronic fatigue. Or if they start fermenting proteins, then it goes to uric acid, and we suffer from symptomologies like gout or muscle fatigue and soreness and inflammation,
aches and pains.
Right.
And they actually, what these yeast do is they actually feed on our proteins, which includes our muscles. They actually make our muscles more flabby at this point. Is that true?
Exactly.
It's fascinating. Now, when you talked about something just a moment ago, you talked about, you know, people consuming sugar, and what it really does, it becomes alcohol. And one of the things I know you've shared before is when we had our meeting in Utah, you said the way people here in Utah, you know, really get high is they don't drink alcohol, but they eat
ice cream.
Right.
Yes.
Now, how does ice cream have that effect? Why does it elevate us?
The sugar lactose, when it's fermented in the body, breaks down to lactic acid. And so, and those acids, or also acetaldehyde, which breaks down to alcohol.
Right.
And so it's just a way in which, if you don't drink alcohol, you can produce it from within and get intoxicated from the foods that you eat.
Right. So that's the elevation that people feel very often is tied to that. That's
really exactly. Cool. That's so cool. There's a sense of well-being, you know, and connection that people get from the foods that they eat, because it produces, well, I'm not going to the bar to get drunk. I'll just have this cup of ice cream, Haagen-Dazs or whatever,
sure.
and
sure.
get high from that. But
sure.
it breaks down to alcohol in the body. And so, and alcohol has a variety of different effects.
Right. What are some of the most negative ones for people? Because we hear some people say, you know, they read an article put out by the Wine Growers Association, I'm using an exaggeration of the name, but that says, you know, drinking, you know, a glass of wine a day is, makes you have a better heart, or, you know, manages your blood flow more effectively, or whatever the case may be.
Well, it acts as a stimulant. And so it can either make you very, very excited and happy, or it can make you very, very depressed.
Right.
But it's an illusion that's happening. It's really the body's attempt to neutralize these acids by releasing hormones that help to energize the body, or to make the body feel warm and in a sense of well-being. But in reality, it's in defense of neutralizing these acids which are being produced through the fermentations of these sugars.
Right. Well, in my own case, you know, I don't drink alcohol, and I wasn't going out and eating sugar in mass, but I was eating a high carbohydrate diet, you know, a lot of starchy carbohydrates, and on the road, pastas and so forth, because I didn't want to go eat animal products, so, you know, I don't want to do that, and I can't just have carrots.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, what do you have around here? And I didn't want to eat avocados, because there's too much fat there, you know. So I was, you know, eating a lot of fruit in the morning, though, so I was getting plenty of sugar there, obviously.
Right.
And then, which probably wouldn't have been as bad if I didn't also have all the other refined carbohydrates, all the pastas on top of it. So the combination mm-hmm. of the two had me filled with candida, and I
exactly.
had no idea. All I knew was I was exerting all this energy, and, you know, I felt pretty good because my mind is so strong,
mm-hmm.
but I felt like as the years were going by, it was taking more and more willpower and less just pure energy, let's rock.
Mm-hmm.
And when I made the shift and started drinking the green drink and started alkalizing like crazy and doing that super hydration,
right.
In 30 days, I had no candida in my system, and I didn't mm-hmm. go in there and try and kill it with some drug. What's the problem with trying to kill the candida?
Well, here again, one of my foundational principles is you don't kill anything. All you do is change the environment, and those particular forms adapt to that environment. So matter cannot be destroyed, nor can it be created. It only changes its form and function.
Right.
And so bacteria you don't kill. It either evolves upward or downward.
Right.
Depending on the environment. So environment is key. So we're dealing with an ecology problem. With your situation, Tony, when you were doing the high carbos and the fruit, you're going up and down and up and down throughout the day. And when you go to a green foods, low sugar or low carbohydrate diet with lots of good oils, what happens is it brings you up to a certain level. You maintain that level
That's
for
true.
A longer period of time before you coming down. So there's not so many spikes up and down with a diet that is either high carbohydrate or high protein or some variation of that.
Does this mean I'll become very peaceful?
You become very peaceful. But
that's scary to me. I don't want that.
But you know what else it does?
What?
And this is one of the benefits of this is possible. You know, I can't promise this. You could become maybe the strongest man or the wisest man in all the land.
Well, I'm ready for both of those. I will tell you sincerely, and for those watching also, that the difference in my energy, I've always had high energy, you know, because a huge part of that is my mission in my life. And the other part of it is because I don't make food a dominant part of my life. I don't sit down and have all these huge meals. It's like that's not important to me. As most people know, sleep has not been either, who've been to my programs. But the difference is there's just a constant level of energy. When I'm on stage, I drink the green drink on stage instead of drinking, you know, fruit drinks, and it's, oh my God, what a difference. And I don't mm-hmm. crash at the end, because when I was finally done, I was done.
Right.
And then, you know, I figure that's natural. When you're on stage for 12 or 14 hours and you're like this intensity the whole time, you know, you've run your marathon and you're done. Well, now what I do is, you know, I'm tired, and a lot of times, like, I feel really great. I'm still in a conversation and everything else. It's because I just don't have the acid buildup, and also because I've taken your targeted products that provide that alkalinity buffers for me. And I load up mm-hmm. right before a seminar, you know.
Great.
It's interesting because I hear people, they talk about they're going to go run a marathon and they're going to go do carb loading. You
mm-hmm.
know? And I look at them and go, oh my God, because they think they need that to burn the calories. What's mm-hmm. the fallacy in that?
Well, you don't want to burn carbohydrate. What you want to burn is fat.
Right.
So it's a cleaner fuel to burn without the toxic, some of the major toxic residues that break down cells.
Right.
And so what you need to do is here go to a low carbohydrate and lots of good oils. So rather than carb load, you need good oils or fats in the diet.
Right.
So that you're burning fat rather than sugar, because the sugar can produce lactic acid, and that just literally just paralyzes your muscles.
Right. That's where people hit the wall. And that's why Stu Mittleman, who ran 1,000 miles in 11 days, his whole thing was alkalizing like crazy, eating all these green foods, and making sure that he had the good fats. Mm-hmm. And that's what gives him the ability. Also, he said, if you don't give yourself fat, I think I mentioned this before, the law of mass action says, if you don't put it in your body doesn't burn it. Because
right.
your body knows it has to hang on to its fats. But if you are giving the body the fats it needs, it burns it, and fat burns much more slowly,
right.
much more powerfully, and gives you long levels of endurance, I should say, mm-hmm. through time. Let's talk about some of your discoveries. One of the reasons I came to you initially, and the reason I came and started having my blood looked at, is because I was familiar with the work of Dr. Enderlin in Germany. He was very famous there. And his studies about the impact of what actually happens within the bloodstream, that the environment that our bloodstream creates, or that we create through our lifestyle, actually causes cells in the body to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you weren't out looking for Dr. Enderlin's work, and on your
no.
own came across mm-hmm. distinctions that were shocking to you. One of the things that Dr. Solomon told me is he said, going and spending those 2 days with you, which he expected to spend 2 hours, was a mind-boggling experience
mm-hmm.
because it revolutionized all his traditional training. And he said, I saw it with my own eyes. I saw it in the blood,
mm-hmm.
what I've been told would be impossible to happen. Maybe you can share with people what your studies have found, and maybe where it all started when you first started to make this shift, because you've been
mm-hmm.
studying the blood for some time. But what made the shift for you? What did you discover that's going on in the environment that shocked you?
Well, what shocked me, Tony, was when I was in Houston helping a type 1 diabetic, and looking at that blood at high magnification and seeing a cell before my eyes change its form. I didn't understand possibly the function it was going into, but I saw a red blood cell become a rod bacterial form and then go back into a red blood cell. And then from there, from the center, as if it was giving birth to another form, which was a yeast form, which brings us back to the candida, or the yeast forms that you were suffering from.
Right.
Candida, now, from my research, is born from within rather than from without. So it's not something you catch, it's something you do. It's a lifestyle.
Right.
It's a diet. It's a way of thinking. All this has an effect on our internal environment.
How is that possible? Because traditionally in science, you know, red blood cell is a red blood cell. You know, a brain, we were taught for years that brain cells, we can't replace them. Once it's over, it's over. You know, you blow out that brain cell, or you drink too much alcohol or something, it's gone, they don't replace. And I know I saw last year, for, you know, 100 years we were taught brain cells, we only have so many, they're set up in advance, you can't make new brain cells.
Right.
Now they've discovered they're wrong, that the brain cells, you know, new brain cells are made based upon stimulation within the environment of your body and your mind. But how is it possible for a red blood cell to become a bacteria? I mean, most scientists would say that's physically impossible. And Dr. Solomon said, if I hadn't seen it with my own eyes, you know, I would just say it's physically impossible.
Well, just as amazing that a red blood cell can become a brain cell,
right.
or a red blood cell can become a muscle cell,
right.
or a bone cell,
right.
that it's not the red blood cell that's living per se, but it's what makes up that red blood cell, that in 1864, Antoine Béchamp theorized that there
right.
was something smaller that was living. In fact, he called it the microzyma, or the
right.
small being, that
right.
these little tiny beings were really these, which were indestructible, which he found,
right.
were intelligent.
Right.
It was intelligent matter that had the capability to organize or disorganize based upon the environment that they swam in, kind of like a fish in a fishbowl.
Right.
If the environment is clean and vibrant, the fish are healthy.
Right.
If it's polluted with either too much food or other toxins there, then the fish are disturbed and they disorganize, much like ourselves. And so the discovery was the ability of that which is living, these little tiny beings which make up all organized cells, the precursors to our genetic material, have the ability to become whatever cell the body needs if it's provided the correct internal environment.
Right. Now, I know Dr. Enderlin from Germany also had a very similar theory in the more modern time. Why don't you tell us a little about him?
Well, Enderlin, he passed away in the 60s.
Right.
But his idea here again was that there was a pleomorphic activity, pleo meaning many formism.
Right.
And kind of like a tadpole goes to a frog or a caterpillar evolves into a butterfly.
Right.
That cells have the capability of changing their form. In the first phenomenon, becoming bacteria. In the second stage, yeast or fungus. And in the third stage, mold. And he perceived that there were two primary parasites, which were mold, which were the disturbers or the parasites and representations of all sickness and disease. And so
right.
he tied these two mold parasites to cancer and to other degenerative diseases.
Yes, and his institute is still very strong and actually very well respected in Germany. What's interesting, though, as I listen to you talk about this is, you know, in AIDS, we interviewed Dr. Duesberg recently from UC Berkeley, who's one of the original retroviruses experts and the original discoverer of incongenes, you know, I guess the genes that were related to cancers. And, you know, he, along with about 100 other major scientists and some Nobel laureates from around the world now say that HIV is not the cause of AIDS, which is pretty disturbing. You know, he said there's $50 billion that's been spent over 16 years and not one person has been helped. And so it's creating quite an upset in the community. Although Dr. Montagnier of the Pasteur Institute in France, you know, he's the man who originally discovered the original HIV virus. There's a man in the United States named Dr. Gallo who was actually convicted of scientific misconduct. He got credit for it because he stole it from the other guy. Mm-hmm. But long story short, Montagnier, the original founder, is now saying, listen, there's no way that HIV by itself can create AIDS, which is staggering. He's now saying there are these cofactors. And he said, we don't know what they are, but we know that the virus by itself can't create AIDS. Mm-hmm. And now the head of the NIH is even saying it's not just the virus, because they've realized after, again, $50 billion in 16 years and not helping a single person, that we got a problem here, and there must be something wrong here. There must be some other element. So we're seeing already that people believe that these viruses are mutating, for example, you know, and that's why it's difficult. So if viruses can mutate, if cells, you know, brain cells can regenerate or new ones can be created, then obviously we can see that maybe our red blood cells can actually begin to change, and I guess that's what you're really showing.
Exactly. The red blood cell contains all the matter that's necessary to form any cell in the human body.
Right. I want to follow up just for a second, though, on something you were just mentioning and show that traditional science is now being taught the same thing by the experts. What I mean by that specifically is the idea that there is a single cause of a single disease, some infectious agent is the cause, right. as opposed to the environment, is actually now penetrating traditional medical science. Mm-hmm. This is a book that's used at Harvard Medical School and a variety of medical schools around the country, and the author of it is Dr. Robbins, which is no relationship, by the way. But what I found really interesting is in the very first chapter, Dr. Robbins here says, and bear with me on this, he's talking about the etiology or cause of disease, and he talks about the concept of abnormal symptoms or diseases being caused by what is the cause. And he starts out specifically saying an ancient recorded history for the Akkadians, and he goes through all kinds of detailed writing here. But what he says is if someone became ill, it was either his own fault for having sinned, or it was the making of outside agents such as bad smells, cold, evil spirits, or the gods made you ill. He says, in more modern terms, there are basically two major classes of etiological factors, genetic causes of disease and acquired. And acquired, he says, are infectious, nutritional, chemical, physical, etc. Mm-hmm. And here's what's interesting. He says, knowledge or discovery of the primary cause remains the backbone in which diagnosis can be made, a disease can be understood, or a treatment developed. But, here's what's really interesting, bear with me on this, but the concept, I quote, of one cause leading to one disease developed largely from the discovery of specific infectious agents as the causes of specific diseases is no longer sufficient. This is being taught at Harvard Medical School now. But when you talk to many doctors today, you know, the half-life of medical education now is 5 years. Things are changing so fast, so they're not updated on this. And it says, although it's true that there would be no malaria without malarial parasites, and there would be no tuberculosis without tubercle bacilli, and no gout without a derangement in the urate metabolism, not all individuals infected with these organisms or born with a metabolic abnormality develop the disease. In other words, you can have all these, you know, symptoms, or I should say all of these infectious agents in your body, you don't have any problems, or nor do they develop it at the same rate or with the same severity. In other words, today we know that we have tuberculosis germs, almost all of us in our body, but we don't have tuberculosis. It's only when we pollute the environment, something happens in the environment that allows those things to proliferate. And that's the whole metaphor we talked about earlier, which is, you know, if you went to New York City and there's a big trash strike and you saw these rats around, you wouldn't say, look at all this trash these rats brought. Mm-hmm. You'd say, look what we've done. We created this trash and now the rats are coming and they're going to keep coming. You can kill all the rats off, they're going to keep coming back.
Exactly.
In essence, this is really your theory. Your theory is, and it makes so much common sense, is that it's almost like if we live in a polluted acid rain environment, if this room is polluted, we're going to be toxic. We're going to begin to break down or mutate mm-hmm. to survive. Mm-hmm. In essence, you're really teaching about inner ecology, aren't you?
Exactly. The terrain is everything, and the germ is nothing.
Right.
And so it's the internal environment. That's really our battle cry, to reclaim your inner terrain, to clean up the polluted environments of the fluids through superhydration, through alkalizing and energizing. By doing that, you change the environment. You put new positive impressions at the cellular level, giving the chance for cells to organize rather than disorganize in a polluted environment. So it's the environment. Environment is everything. It's like taking seeds and throwing them on soil. They grow perfectly well, but if you throw them on carpet or some other matter, they don't grow. So the terrain is everything.
And that's why people can be in the same environment. You know, somebody, you know, people who are so fearful of germs are always constantly worrying, oh, somebody sneezed, somebody coughed, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And I've lived in that environment my whole life. I never get sick. And the reason is because my terrain has been so solid. Even in the compromised environment, I never got that compromised, fortunately for me. Mm-hmm. But I heard George Carlin the other day talking about, you wussies, you're so afraid of germs. He goes, I love to eat germs. He said, I drop food on the floor, I pick it up and eat it again. He said, yeah. I'm healthy as hell. He said, you know, he says, what do you think an immune system's for God's sakes? You know, he said, my immune system's good. We used to swim in the river, in the Hudson River, and he said, that made our immune system strong. You know, yeah. And he just went off. He's, I don't know if you've seen his latest special or not. It's funny, but let's talk about the immune system next. Because first of all, if we want our bodies to be healthy, we got to have a strong immune system. And most of us are taught in traditional education that the immune system is this army that goes out and it attacks the bad guys and it kills mm-hmm. them off. But when I went through your blood class and we started studying the blood with these doctors from all over the world, you can see that's not quite how the immune system functions. It's more like a trash collector picking right. up all the waste. Mm-hmm. But if it gets overloaded, the immune system stops. In fact, well, let me hand it off to you. I'm giving away your show.
No, it's all right. The immune system acts as a glorified janitorial service. Its purpose is to collect the garbage and then take it to the dump, which is the liver.
Right.
In fact, in some of my research, that's the very thing that happens. You see the immune system swimming through the serum. It goes over and picks up the garbage, which would be either a bacteria or a yeast cell. Because I perceive the size and also its toxicity, it'll carry it for a little while and then it will spit it out, and a smart white blood cell will then take it and pull it from behind as if it's carrying it to someplace. And here again, I perceive would be the dump, which would be the liver.
I've, you know, being in the class, I've watched this happen live, and you told everybody, watch this. This yeast cell, it's going to spit it back out because this is a relatively new white blood cell, I guess, mm-hmm. and it's learning, so to speak. It's in the beginning process of it, but that the successful ones drag it along until it gets there.
Yeah, you can see it consuming the yeast, and then it carries it for a while, and then you see it throwing it out.
Now, my father died of what's called an autoimmune disorder about a year ago, mm-hmm. and when the doctors were treating him, I said, well, how can you treat him? Because they say they don't understand what makes the body, quote, attack itself, where your immune system is attacking itself.
Right.
But you have an interesting perception or theory that makes so much sense to me, which is, I guess, what's happening is these cells now, when they're finally overloaded, there's so much toxicity. My father was taking drugs to bulk up because he wanted to work out and he mm-hmm. wanted to build muscle in his older age. And he was doing a lot of things that were very destructive that we weren't aware of at the time. But what happened is his body literally started feeding on itself. And so they gave him more and more drugs, none of which helped. Mm-hmm. He lost 70 pounds in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. It was a complete wasting wow. away. But as bad as that was, what hurt me the most is I knew that no one was helping him, but I didn't know what, I couldn't explain. I just knew that his body obviously was toxic and if he had a lot of white blood cells, they were probably proliferating to try and do the job of cleaning things up. I knew that even before I met you. But explain that. Why then do other white blood cells seem to be feeding on or attacking, by some mm-hmm. people's description, these other white blood cells? What is an autoimmune deficiency in your perception?
In my perception, here again, it's the immune system, which is carrying out its function to collect garbage, becomes full of garbage. It'd be like a garbage man going out collecting too much garbage, and the truck breaks down.
Right.
And so the white cell is breaking down because of its consumption of all this morbid matter,
right.
and then becomes disturbed itself and starts breaking down itself, thereby activating more white blood cells to clear out that garbage.
Right.
So it's like towing away the garbage truck that's broken down with garbage.
Right. And so now you see, when the system is so toxic, it becomes so overwhelmed that it starts to pile on top of each other, basically, and it becomes a continuous process. And so when you look at it from the outside, one way to interpret that is to look at that and say, oh my God, the immune system is attacking itself. Another way to interpret it might be to say the immune system is doing everything it can to try and get rid of the waste that is coming in more rapidly than it's able to clean it up.
Right.
It's interesting.
This session continues on the next CD.